Welcome to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Ben Rylan. This week, we're starting to get into the thick of awards season, with the Golden Globes taking place last weekend. How did you miss that? And two big award winners hitting the United Kingdom cinemas this week, La La Land and Manchester by the Sea. Joining me in the studio today to talk through these films and one more as well is the film critic Karen Krasanovich. Later in the show, we will be discussing a charming French comedy called Irreplaceable. But first, Karen, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you.
You're most welcome. Let's start today with, I think, the film that we all need to get our eyes and ears around, which is La La Land. Now, this is a musical, Karen.
It is a musical. It really, really is a musical.
It's a proper musical.
A modern day musical. It's an updated musical.
It's a musical in which the songs take place in the reality in which the characters are. So, Karen, this is from director Damien Chazelle. Mm-hmm. It stars Emma Stone, Ryan Gosling as lovers in Los Angeles, struggling to make careers in Hollywood. A familiar story to all of us. This swept the awards season at the Golden Globes last weekend. Why is everyone so in love?
There are a lot of reasons. At the Golden Globes, this film won 7 out of 7 what it was nominated.
A record.
It was a record, actually. The last record was 5. And it's about L.A. Now, L.A. loves itself.
L.A. does love itself, but most people that visit L.A. tend, in my experience, to not love L.A. back.
No, that's because if you're over 12, L.A. isn't going to like you. Really, L.A. is about exploiting youth and talent. It's about breaking hearts. It's about hope. That's
what
LA
making you walk everywhere too.
They don't like it when you walk. Like it, that's right.
No, but they don't like public transport either.
No,
that
no
is
public transport.
A discussion for another show.
It is indeed. In fact, the transport show. It's a land of hope and beauty. It's a land of dazzling dreams, of hyper reality, and that's what La La Land is all about. It's about all of the beautiful young people. Who, in fact, the opening scene is people dancing on cars basically in a traffic jam, singing about how it's another day of sun, and they're all actors, they're all performers, and they're all probably on their way to auditions if they're lucky, or really awful jobs if it's in reality.
Well, probably one or the other or both.
Yeah.
Now, before we get into more about this film, let's hear a little bit of a clip. This is Emma Stone performing in La La Land.
She captured a feeling, sky with no ceiling, the sunset inside a frame. Here's to the ones who dream, foolish as they may seem. Here's to the hearts that
Karen, it's funny, isn't it? Because when you think back to when musicals ruled the world, way back in old Hollywood during the reign of Louis B. Mayer, all movies were all about taking people out of their everyday lives. I don't remember the exact quote, but Louis B. Mayer actually said something along the lines of, movies should be about allowing the miserable everyman to escape whatever his life happens to be. Step into the cinema and you're in a different world. That's really what the great MGM musicals were all about. Is it perhaps no coincidence that politically around the world, things have taken quite a tense turn in many corners of the globe? Is that why perhaps we're starting to see films that aren't telling us what's out the window? They're telling us what's happening somewhere else in some dreamland.
Well, I mean, if you look at the Bollywood industry is based exactly on the same premise, you know, get out of your life, go see a movie. And that's a huge industry. Less so in China. But it's the reason that we're seeing a movie like La La Land. Now, don't forget, La La Land is also means that you're out of touch with reality. You know, he's in La La Land. It is escapism, but it also slots in with a lot of reality TV, X Factor programs, things like that. Because if you were to take the singing and the dancing, well, the dancing mostly, and compare the dancing of Emma Stone and Ryan Gosling, for example, to Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers. There is no comparison.
No. You wouldn't. Expect that, though? I mean,
yeah, because it's Hollywood, and I expect Hollywood to be really cutthroat and good. But this is the Hollywood that you can enter into yourself. It's accessible because they don't sing that well and they don't dance that well, but they do it just well enough to dazzle you. And there are some wonderful choreographed pieces about going to a Hollywood party, for example, and maybe bumping into the person that can help your career. And it's all about that, but it's all very light and bright colored. And I've been listening to the soundtrack for the last couple of days, and I actually watched La La Land again because I do have a BAFTA screener. And
stop bragging.
Sorry.
Come on.
I watched it on my watch, though, so it was really small, so I didn't enjoy it. There, do you feel better? It is a wonderful, feel-good, light, accessible film that you feel you could participate in. And it has the same sort of tone as The Artist, that light. But how well it's going to hold up in history doesn't matter.
It's funny,
right,
a lot of people
like
have said that.
Candy.
That it's,
yeah.
It's, I mean, obviously, we were just saying it broke all the records at the Golden Globes. Mm-hmm. And yet, despite all of the almost universal praise that it's been receiving, quite a few people have been quick to point out that, no, it's not a classic.
It isn't. No, it isn't a classic. Parts of it might be. I think, for example, Jimmy Fallon took off the opening sequence of the cars, the people dancing on the cars for the Golden Globe ceremony. And I think that might be something that people might use in the future. Or certain parts of the song. Some of the songs are very, very catchy. Like, you didn't play Ryan Gosling's song City of Stars. That's very distinctive. And that might actually become a trope later. But for the most part, this has the feeling. Justin Hurwitz did the movie Whiplash, did the music for that, along with Broadway songwriters Benj Pezek and Justin Paul. And you can really hear the Broadway-ness in this film, but it has that Whiplash jazz to it.
Mm.
And it's really catchy. So visually, sonically, and also the stars are really wonderful. It's wonderful to watch. It's a great cast. And it's just a wonderful piece of candy that we need right now after such a bitter year.
Exactly. And largely why the timing is as it is. Mm. Interesting, though, a couple of years ago, well, quite a few years ago, we had a movie, Moulin Rouge, out.
Yes.
Everyone thought that would reinvigorate the world of the musical after such a long hiatus. It didn't. Chicago also did extremely well. Everyone expected the musical to come back. It didn't. A few more came out after that. Les Mis, not that long ago as well. We seem to have musicals that do well, and yet they don't explode at the box office over many, many years. You know, it's funny, isn't it? Why don't we seem to latch on to these and try and make more and more and more?
Well, there's the Scottish one, Sing, which is fantastic. Really good. It's very hard to make a musical. It's very hard to get the songs, to get everything to fit, get the libretto right, the lyrics right. I think it's much harder for funding. And I think a lot of people are put off by the idea of a musical. You know, in the Golden Globes, they had comedy or musical. You know, it's a much different race than the Oscars. Yeah, it's sort of like a child's version of the awards. But it's and not to say that it's not worth anything. I mean, it is, obviously. But musicals are huge fun, but they do have a limited audience.
Mm-hmm. We'll be discussing more about the Golden Globes, indeed, and those weird categories on The Cinema Show. That's at 20:00 Friday, London time. Download the podcast if you like. La La Land is out in cinemas everywhere, right now, everywhere, absolutely everywhere. Let's move along now, a slight change in tone. From Manchester by the Sea. This bleak drama stars Casey Affleck as a janitor called Lee, who suddenly becomes responsible for his teenage nephew, Patrick, after the boy's father dies. It's not an easy transition, is it, Karen?
No. In fact, I didn't know anything about this film when I went to see it. I was taken by someone else who said, let's go see it. I was like, okay. I do think only focus on stuff that's right in front of me. And I actually thought it was British. Manchester by the Sea is a town in Massachusetts. It's not Manchester here, which everybody thinks is funny because it's landlocked, I believe. But anyway, never mind. I just want to clear that up. It was written and directed
those
by
hilarious Brits. Like,
I know. Everything revolves around them. It's all about them. Written and directed by Kenneth Lonergan, as you put it. I can't hardly pronounce it.
Kenneth Lonergan.
Lonergan, thank you. With Casey Affleck, Michelle Williams, and Kyle Chandler, or Gretchen Mol, and Lucas Hedges. Lucas Hedges. Wow. Okay. The story is Casey Affleck plays this kind of weird guy. He's a landlord. He's a fixer-upper guy, maintenance guy. Lives in some sort of funky, horrible basement, and you can't figure out why. And then he finds out that, and this is actually the structure of the film is more like a play, I think. The editing is quite deliberate. That he finds out that he has to go home. And it's a spoiler to say that his brother dies, but, you know, his brother dies. And he has to go home to look after the brother's son, Patrick. Now, this kid plays hockey, seems like a well-scrubbed-up sort of kid, but he's actually, as most teenage boys are, naughty, you know, naughty. He sort of does bad things with girls and mistreats people and is pretty sneaky. And the brother's like, what's going on here? And in the meantime, the brother has left that town for a reason, and that reason starts to catch up with him.
Okay. So obviously the description bleak drama sort of captures that.
Yeah.
It's interesting that this film features Michelle Williams quite prominently everywhere, and yet some have claimed that she was a little bit sidelined in the film itself.
She was basically kept as a surprise. She has the most important role in the film, the most pivotal scene. It's toward the end of the film, and it feels like a blow to the stomach. Now, I always thought she was a bit actorly. I thought, you know, playing Marilyn or whatever, I thought she was a bit precious and a bit arch, actually. Did a good job, don't get me wrong, but I always felt that she was sort of, you know, I'm an actor. She does an amazing job in this, and I'm not a fan, but I am now. So, she's there for the sucker punch. Kyle Chandler is amazing as Joe, the father. And Casey Affleck really does an amazing job as this guy that kind of looks like he's itching and twitching all the time. He's kind of, things are really not good in his head. And he's got some things that he never sorts out. But it's dramatic. It's incredibly shocking. I haven't seen a film that's this shocking in a long time. And the less you read about it, the better.
So. Let's hear a little bit of a clip before we go any further.
All my friends are here. I got two girlfriends and I'm in a band. You're a janitor. What the hell do you care where you live?
Jesus Christ, what's your problem?
Are you having a breakdown?
I'm just freaking out.
You'll do anything to get rid of me.
That's not true.
That's just, I don't know anything about this.
Director Kenneth Lonergan. Now, he's quite known for these family dramas, isn't he? So he was nominated for an Oscar back in 2000 for You Can Count on Me. That was nominated for the screenplay, we should say. What do you think it is about this particular genre that lends itself quite well to him?
I think that he's very concerned about the balance of life, about the darkness and the light, and also that within every family there is a very, very dark shadow of tragedy or things going wrong or hard feelings or whatever. And I think he's really trying to find it feels very, I'm not saying normal, but it does feel very normal for a drama. It's like normality is the basis, but drama is the decoration on it. And that's what's very interesting. He also did Margaret as well. But don't forget, he was offered a job writing The Adventures of Rocky and Bullwinkle as well, so he's got a lighter side. Sorry,
he was offered that job.
He was. I actually don't know if he took it, but I thought it would lighten the load a little bit here. He can handle it. These films are very intensely dramatic, but quite subtle and quite realistic. And sometimes when you're watching films where something really amazing happens, and which happens here in Manchester by the Sea, it feels pretentious or artificial, and it doesn't here. It feels real. And I think that's what Lonergan can do best. It feels very, very real.
I assume you're talking about Rocky and Bullwinkle.
Yeah, actually, because the squirrel was my favorite.
That's Manchester by the Sea. It's out now in the US and the UK and will continue to roll out around the world over the coming months. Finally, we'll head to France for a comic drama that's just been released in the UK. Irreplaceable is set in rural France, where everyone's favorite local doctor, Jean-Pierre, is sick. How ironic. A new younger doctor, Natalie, is brought in to cover for him, but the locals don't take to her too well, and she struggles to adapt to country life. Karen, Ah, it's a quaint little premise.
It is. It is. You keep thinking it's All Creatures Great and Small with French people in it. And it's not quite irreplaceable. The French title is Médecin de Campagne, which is Country Doctor, I think, is what it's called.
Reminds me of a soap opera in Australia, A Country Practice. Ooh, also a quaint little drama.
I remember Country Practice, yeah. it's one of these things where this is actually quite a grown-up film. And that sounds, it sounds like it's going to be some sort of stupid cow poop comedy, you know, like, oh, the doctor's sick, and then this hot woman comes in.
And someone trips over a bucket.
Exactly, you know, and then there's milking jokes. I don't know. But it's not quite like that. Thomas Lilty, he's 40 years old. He's made quite a few films, actually. His last one is Hippocrates, which is, again, about, he is himself as a doctor and filmmaker, which I think is interesting. And this is based on his experiences in Normandy, where he replaced a country doctor, and he found it impossible.
Really?
Just impossible to deal with the country people because
they were so accustomed to their own doctor.
Yeah. Well, I don't want to say country people. I mean, people are people, really. But
people are creatures of habit.
They are indeed. And also, I think people in the country, I think particularly because I come from a farming community, and I know that they have different ideas about healthcare. You know, well, that cow's going to die. You know, that's just the way. Dad's going to die. Don't bother getting the doctor in. You know, I mean, they have a different attitude to veterinary practices and medical practices. And it shows here in Irreplaceable.
It sounds like a charming little easy-to-watch film. The kind of film you might take your mum along to. I take my mum?
Yes, you could. You could if she likes cows and buckets and Gladstone bags and things like that. But it's a light but profound comedy, and it says a lot about human nature. And also, the Variety critic said that this woman is middle-aged. The middle-aged French woman comes in. She's 40, and she comes, same age as the director, comes in to take over from the favorite doctor, who is played by Francois Cluzet, who is from The Intouchables, Tell No One, and Little White Lies. So he's very, very good. And she is absolutely wonderful as well. Marianne Denicourt from La Belle Noiseuse and Sade. There we go. Not Sade.
No.
Marquis de Sade.
So how much of an insider do you think we're getting here into actual French life, though? Is this the kind of film that takes you out of a reality? You know, like those, we were just referencing those quaint little dramas. You know, you look at those types of British television series usually, and it feels as though it's taking you into this lovely, cozy little world. But obviously, we know we're not in real Britain. Do you feel as though you're getting a little slice of real France or no? Not really.
Yeah, but you're getting the real France that if you were in France, you'd get. I mean, it's people sort of, I don't know, I mean, you grew up in Melbourne, right?
Yes, exactly.
I grew up in a really small town, and the farmers didn't use like hankies. If they did, they just blow their, I mean, anyway, never mind. But you get that sort of really earthy, farmerly kind of dirty sort of, this is how it's working. It's very practical, and it's actually incredibly lyrical and funny and loving look at these people who work with death and dirt and poop and feed and animals all the time, and are really usually scraping along the bottom to try and make a living. So it's reality, but it's lovingly done.
Well, you can get your dose of cows and poop and quaint French life with Irreplaceable. That's out now in the United Kingdom. That brings us to the end of today's program. Thanks to my guest, Karen Krizanovich. This has been the Monocle Arts Review with me, Ben Ryland. The show was produced by the very capable Holly Fisher. Join us again at the same time on Monday. We will be discussing art in the United States with Kathleen Fox Davies. But for now, goodbye from me. Thanks for listening.